Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, and I'd like to take you guys a little bit back in time to September of 1994. This was a time for me when I was getting into college, finally, and not just getting into college, but getting into college in New York City. During that time, I had finished up 6 years in Richmond, Virginia, and despite the fact that I have some really great memories of it now, back then, I couldn't wait to get out. Made some friends, and thanks to the wonders of social media, those friends are once again in my life. And you're actually going to hear from quite a few of them in future episodes. But what I was really anxious to do was to get back to New York City. I never actually lived in New York City during the time when I was growing up. I always lived in the suburbs over in Poughkeepsie, about an hour away from the city. But the city itself always got some real inspiration out of me. Like, I just felt like I needed to be there. And every time I visited, whenever I was visiting with my father, we would always make a trip into the city, and it would just feel so electric. It was just a great time to be in the city, and I was really looking forward to the opportunity to come back there and live there because I was dorming there. Here I am moving into my dorm. I would say quote unquote dorm because I lived on 77th and Broadway, which was at that time the Broadway American Hotel, which was not exactly the best kind of place, but it was, there was something about it that just gave a really good energy to it. Probably had something to do with the fact that right next door was a great bar called Blondie's, and that was actually where I had my first shot of hard liquor around that same time. So yeah, there were quite a few adventures for me during that time. But the main thing that really got me about being in college was the fact that I was moving on to doing something that I wanted to do. I was done with the academic years of high school, middle school, and so on. And here I was ready to focus on things that I really wanted to do. I was going to be involved in theater. And at that time, I had taken the BA Theater Arts program. Tried for the BFA for acting, didn't get in, but at the same time, the BA with Theater Arts actually wound up being a real blessing for me to be in that because I got to work with so many great people that were there for the same reason that I was. I had a dream that I wanted to make into a reality. So did they. So did everyone who was there. They were inspired in some way, shape, or form. And it's wonderful to see so many of them still out there, still pursuing their dream, still doing their best to make it a reality, still making it a reality, making sure that nothing is going to stand in their way. And I am so, so thrilled to say that I have a guest here for this week's episode that is just like that. She came into Marymount with a vision, with an inspiration. She wanted to see it through after graduation. She kept on with it. And now she has a rough cut of a short film that not only was she the star in, but she also wrote and directed and produced. So you want to talk about just some wonderful inspiration there. She wouldn't have had that if she hadn't gone to Marymount and been around that kind of atmosphere. And it was because of that that she was able to go beyond what she had learned at Marymount and create something of her very own. Like I said before, she is an actress, she is a writer, she is a director, she is a yoga instructor. She is doing a lot of great things out there in New York, and I'm so thrilled to have her here as my guest. Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce Christina Erickson. Christina, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great. I am doing great. And it's so great to have you here as a guest because it just reminded me of that drive that everyone was having. It's kind of like the movie Fame, you know, without the... I don't know if anyone experienced what Coco went through, but I know, or but I know that, you know, like there were all these different people that were coming in that wanted to create, that wanted to express themselves. And here we were. We were here on 71st Street and 3rd Avenue. We did not have a campus. You know, it wasn't a university. Marymount Manhattan
buildings,
College.
You know.
Yeah. Marymount Manhattan College, what they did, and I'm not sure if you'd gotten the same spiel during your orientation, but I remember one of the ladies who was leading our orientation saying, New York City is your campus, which is basically their way of saying, we don't have much space to work with. So many of you are going to go on 77th and Broadway to that little hotel that we're not going to really talk about. And some of you are going to be at the Y. You know, that's...
Yeah. The dorm situation is always questionable when you go to school in New York City.
Yeah, but
there's just not good, you know, the housing, you know, it is what it is.
But I understand that it was right after both of us graduated. That was when they decided to actually have an official Marymount Manhattan College dorm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that. Yeah.
I remember being there for the great ceremony. And I was just thinking like, well, they have my money. So this must be where it went. So let's go ahead and see what the fuss is all about.
Hey, here's to the future.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. You know, and it's a shame though, that, you know, that all those people that all the people that went in there didn't quite have the same type of experience that I had, that you had. Were you at the Broadway American as well?
I was my freshman year.
Nice.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Tell me you had a 38 room. Did you have one of the 38 rooms?
I can't remember. All I remember is that place was so crazy. There was like old people there, and it was it was definitely a very interesting experience. But I was and I'm a little young for my grade, so I was 17 years old. And
you're kidding.
You know, here I am like having freedom and, you know, like this, and had this cool roommate, her who grew up in New York City, and her dad was like a bouncer at like one of the big clubs, you know, like,
wow.
It was in the music business. And she taught me all about like Led Zeppelin and Janis Joplin.
Who's your roommate?
Kate Klefter.
Okay.
We were both gingers, so you know we got along really well. I still keep in touch with her a little bit. So,
Very cool.
So that was my freshman year at Broadway American.
You got to experience Big Nick's though across the street.
Oh my! That place is still around. That's so funny that you.
It is. I thought it closed.
It's not in the same location. It's not 77th and Broadway. It's like over on Columbus. I had lunch with my friend there like a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, this is the greatest day of my life that this place still exists.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so happy. It's like, it's a little more refined, I guess. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, still delicious.
Oh, yeah.
And still very much there, so...
With its Yellow Pages style menu where, you know,
yeah.
Like...
Yeah, that's cleaned up a bit, but it's still, the food is still good. I had a burger.
Nice. There you
great
go.
Great yogi.
Wasn't the sumo burger though, was it?
I don't know. Yeah. I just had like I'm such a picky eater. I still eat like a 5-year-old. I'm like plain cheeseburger, french fries.
The sumo burger, for those of you who don't know, on 77th and Broadway, there was a wonderful place called Big Nick's that was mainly a pizza joint, but at the same time, they had pretty much anything that was there. And one of their big things that they had, because they always have like, you know, places always have their little eating challenges or whatever. And this one wasn't really an eating challenge. It was just like, if you can hold this down, then, you know, good for you. But it was called the sumo burger, which was 1 pound of beef. And just, you know, like I never had it myself, but I've had a couple of friends who have tried it. One of them actually not only was able to finish it, but he also finished his shake and all of his fries. I was impressed. And
what's
he's
on
not
it?
A big guy. You can put whatever fixings you want, but it was 1 pound of beef that made up this one burger.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it was quite the haul.
That sounds awesome.
All right, so let's talk about you. I know, you know, like these people want to hear your story.
Okay.
So let's start from I just almost had a Julie Andrews moment. Let's start at the very beginning. No, just,
it's a very good place to start.
Exactly. There I am with Marymount again.
Good stuff, right? Yep.
Oh, yeah. So,
musical theater geeks.
Oh, yeah. Hey, let's go back to the very beginning. So everyone's kind of got that moment, you know, that makes you say, like, I want to do that. I want to be like that. I want to be close to that. I want to do something similar to that. What was that first spark? What was it that got you?
Yeah, so fourth grade was not great for me. A bunch of my friends had, like, my quote unquote friends had turned on me. I was getting bullied. I was about 9. Hmm. My mother was marrying my stepfather at the time, who's a Vietnam vet, and it was really rough. And I just, you know, I'd always been pretty introverted, and like, I liked was playing with my dolls. Like, I was all like into my own imagination. Mm-hmm. And,
were they giving you any reason of why they were bullying you?
I don't know. Who can remember? We were 9. You know what I mean? Who knows what it could have been. You know, but yeah, I remember it felt like all the whole school hated me, you know, it just felt like that. And, actually I'm just supposed to be transparent. And, So I was just having a really rough year that year, and I remember watching an episode of Growing Pains.
Nice.
And Mike Seaver was in a play, and I was like, oh, that's what I want to do.
Just like be, oh, so not be on TV, but like be in the play, you know, like.
Yeah, no, I nice. Was, yeah, I was, yeah, I wanted to do acting. I wanted to be an actor, you know.
Awesome.
I thought, oh, that's exactly what I want to do. And then the next year, my mom signed me up for acting class. And then shortly after that, I was in dance class.
Oh, wow.
And doing plays and stuff. You know, ever since, you know, yeah, like late elementary, early junior high. And, you know, what's so great about like a theater community or a dance community, or even like, you know, shooting a film, right? Is you become, it's like the sense of community. Like there's that Malcolm Gladwell book that talks about, you know, success. And, you know, one of the successes is having a network, like a support system. And they don't necessarily have to be your best friends, but it's a group of people that like help, like support, inspire, and raise each other up. And I always found that in theater. I always found that, in a dance school. And I, you know, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, I belong, you know?
Yeah.
And then in high school, I wound up going to this acting camp in upstate New York. And it was like, oh, finally, like other weird kids like me, I love this so much. I had the best time. Like, as a matter of fact, every August, you know, because I went in August, like every August, I'm like, oh, Stage Door. And Stage Door has a pretty impressive alumni too.
Oh, really?
I'd go back now, but I'd be like the oldest person there. Like there was a bunch of celebrity kids, a bunch of city kids. Like I became pretty good friends with Mia Tyler, Steven Tyler's daughter from Aerosmith, who later became like a, she was like a fit model. Now she's a photographer, an artist, a mom. She's a super cool chick. This day, I think she lives in LA. Bijou Phillips was there too.
Really?
A bunch of people.
Wow.
Who else? Celebrity. I'm blanking right now, but there was some pretty. Yeah. There's some pretty heavy hitters there at Stage Door Matter.
That's terrific.
And yeah, it was like this old hotel, and we got up, and we, you know, they woke us up in the morning. We had breakfast. We took classes. Everybody was in a play. You know, you put on a show in 3 weeks. And again, it was like, I was like, oh, okay. Like, it was like, you know, these people are my people, you know. Finally makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I got to Marymount, it's funny, you're talking about like, oh, being so driven. And, you know, like I was like a little like emo brat at that age. Like I was just, you know, like I was a little rebellious. I was a little, you know, like I was, you know, I was smoking a lot of pot. I was smoking cigarettes. Like I was like a little bit like badly behaved at that point.
Well, you were finding your way, you know.
And I've always been like a late bloomer. Yeah. And again, you know, it's like I'm young and I have like all this freedom. So
why not exploit it?
You know, I don't know. I just felt like, I don't know. Like I was just like really angry. I was like, move over, Kristen Stewart. Like I was like, I invented that. I know that game, you know? You know, getting tattoos, getting pierced at that age. And I, you know, and then, you know, after college, it was like this rude awakening. It was like, oh, now you're in a really competitive field, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that the younger you are, it's actually more competitive. And I looked like I was like 15 till I was about 30. So, you know, like I was able to play, you know, luckily, you know, so I think the younger you are, I think there's more people. Mm-hmm. I think Harrison Ford tells a story about how he was in LA and he, you know, he lived in a house and he was a carpenter and like, you know, one guy left, got married, one guy quit, blah, blah, blah. He was like, I was the last one left in the house, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that this, you know, I mean, the business is a marathon.
It really is. And yeah, there are too many people are thinking of it as a sprint, you know, because
right.
that's what they see on TV.
You right, know, young, see, if they gotta be young, got it, you know, and even like, you know, like when you tell your family, they're like, oh, you know, like, you know, you're not Gwyneth Paltrow by the time you're 25, come home, you know, like,
right.
you know, there's that attitude too. And it's like, people don't understand. It's like, no, this is, you know, this is who I am. Like, this is my life. And I've had to explain this, you know, I mean, I think, you know, your family and your friends or whatever from home are like, they're well-meaning, but it's not helpful or supportive to have that attitude.
Right. You know? So during, I know that, you know, like during my time, mainly like in my third year when I was at Marymount, that's when I realized that I need to get a job. I need to, you know, there's my father was, you know, was helping me out and everything. So that way I could, you know, concentrate on school. But during my junior year, things kind of took a turn and I needed to make my own money.
Yeah.
And so I wound up getting a part-time job doing admin work for a company on 49th and Madison. And then I would just walk to class the rest of the, after I was finished. So that was, you know, that was part-time work that definitely helped. And it also kind of sprung me into my full-time job that I would later get as an admin assistant, and admin work just kind of like was a constant for me. So that way I was able to make a living in some way and kind of take the acting and later on the writing and just kind of put that as not quite a hobby, but supplementary income.
Yeah. See, it's so funny. Like you did the responsible thing. I was like, I'm going to wait tables until I'm famous. You know, like that was my attitude, which would be next year when I was 21, you know.
But at the same time though, I mean, like I wish that, you know, that I had the opportunity to, you know, get some internships and be, you know, like more involved in the field that I was really, you know, looking forward to being. Who knows what would have happened, you know, like after that. But at the same time, like, you know, right now.
But yeah, your parents, you know, they're well-meaning. It's an expensive city and you need insurance and you need to pay your apartment. You know, you need, you know, I mean, I get what they're saying.
Right.
But, you know, there's this thing like where the mind goes, the energy flows, you know, and there were so many years where, you know, I had made sacrifices, where I had chose the restaurant job over the audition, where I had tried to do the responsible thing. And you know what? Like, I still wound up here.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I wound up, this is me. This is who I am. And it's never going to change. So I have to actually give this 100%.
Yeah.
You know, I can't split my focus anymore because, you know, when you, I notice like when I'm too scattered, when I have a lot of like balls in the air, like everything gets done, but it's not everything gets done like half-assed or like, you know.
Right.
So at least, you know, now with like the yoga teaching, like it's flexible. It's early in the morning, it's afternoon. Like I never have a problem getting a sub for a class. You know, if I have an audition, I can go, you know, it's never a question.
So speaking of which, how did yoga come into the picture?
Well, I was again, real talk. I told you I was pretty transparent. So right. I was smoking so much pot, I was having panic attacks.
Oh.
So I was in my early 20s. I was alone. I have, you know, I'm actually in the same apartment I've been in this whole time.
Really?
So yeah. So I definitely, yeah, what?
Rent control?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah.
Sweet.
Very, very, very lucky in that way that I've had this apartment this whole time. But so again, So I was having these anxiety attacks, and I was like, okay, maybe let me start dancing again, because I danced as a child. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll go take ballet, go take jazz or whatever. And mm-hmm. then I saw at the dance studio, there was a yoga class, and yeah. it was such a game changer.
Yeah.
And in the beginning of your yoga like journey, like the gains are huge.
Yeah.
You know, like in the beginning, you're like, whoa, like, what is this? And then I wound up getting, instead of having a nighttime restaurant job, I had a daytime restaurant job. I actually worked at EJ's, not right next to Marymount, which yep. the schedule was a little bit, it was like a little bit more healthy, you know, because night working is, you know, there's with when you work at night, when you're working like 4 to midnight, it's just, it cultivates bad habits. You're going out drinking, you're sleeping late, you're just, you know, you're just living life backwards and not getting anything done. So at least when I was at EJ's, it was like more of like a regular schedule.
Yeah, it's like the night shifts are kind of like, it's almost like you're a perpetual college student because
yeah, it's unhealthy. It's toxic. You know, I've worked in so many restaurants and it's like super stressful, and it's, and also like I mentioned, like naturally, I mean, I know how to be an extrovert, but I'm definitely naturally introverted. Like that kind of job like drains me like crazy, and I'm not the only one. Like I just saw it. They'll just, that industry will just like suck the lifeblood out of you for like a couple of bucks. You know, it's not even worth it.
Wow.
You know, it's not, I mean, you can kind of hold your head above water, but you're not getting anywhere.
But it's was the tip money good though? You know, like,
I mean, yeah, EJ's, it was all volume, you know? So, I mean, the customers were a complete nightmare. It was the Upper East Side, like total nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
But you made money just by turning your tables by sheer volume. Get them in, get them out. You know, that's how that place is and still thriving to this day. Still does really, really well. So,
yeah, EJ's was the workplace for quite a few.
Yeah, a bunch of Marymounters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a good game. And, you know, and then later on, I wound up working at Nobu, which was like crazy high end Japanese celebrity haunt kind of place. And, you know, they like made you be full time. There was no flexibility in your schedule. It was like, you know, it was extremely rigid, but at least EJ's, there was some wiggle room. You know, you can get a shift covered. You can move things around. You don't have to be there 5 days a week.
Well, I'm sure with Nobu, you know, like they have, I'm sure there's like a waiting list of people that were waiting to work there.
They weeded people out pretty quickly because that job was like, it's so stressful. It's so rigid. I've had a stomach ache for like the 5 years I worked there. I hated it.
Five years. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I was hostess and then I did coat check and then I was maitre d'. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, but again, like, you know, I still wound up here.
Yep.
I still wound up here. And that job like that, like a corporate restaurant like that, like there's no room for acting. There's no room for, you know, anything besides them and like sleeping, you know, that was like all you did.
So I know that well. So, I mean, even though I was working a desk job, you know, like that was, you know, all of my writing and everything and had to be done during the evening.
Yeah.
So it was almost like writing came as a necessity of being my creative outlet. So you're doing yoga. Was that also kind of like that outlet that you were kind of craving?
It's not the same. I feel like, yeah, no. I mean, I guess it sort of took the place of dance over time. Because mm-hmm. dance is, you know, dance, that dance, you have to be young. You have to be good now.
Right.
And I loved it, but I didn't love it enough for that fight.
Right.
You know, for that, I just didn't love it enough. So I think that the yoga took the place of the dance, you know, physically. And also, actually, I think every actor should at least try yoga because it makes you more present. It makes you more open. Your instrument, your body is more open. You're actually there. The self-consciousness goes away. You know, the need, the drive to tell that story, to be there with that person. I think my acting became much stronger when I practice yoga regularly. I think it was a hugely helpful tool for me.
So
I mean, everybody's different, but
Was it like, you know, the meditation element of it?
Yeah, yeah. Breathing, being in your body, being more body aware, being relaxed, being more confident.
Yeah.
All of these things, I think it's definitely, I think they definitely go hand in hand. Nice. And also like the discipline of the practice, you know, like, you know, when you, and actually I've been in this scene study class for 10 years with Alice, speaking of another community. I've been studying with Alice Spivak for a very, very long time. And I think not only is she an amazing teacher, but I think that a lot of actors grow really, really well in her class because she makes us rehearse five times a week. I mean, we rehearse 5 hours, put up the scene, and then she gives notes, and then we do 2 more rehearsals, and then we show it again.
Wow.
Show her the scene again. So the class takes a big commitment, but it's similar to yoga in that way because yoga requires you to practice. You know, you have to, you know, you have to, if you want to, I always tell people, you know, one class isn't going to do it. It's about consistency and discipline. And some days you're going to suck and some days you're going to be great. And being okay with it either way. It took, you know, the yoga took a lot of that, like that ego driven, got to have it now, you know, learning that like we were talking about acting being a marathon and life being a journey, as opposed to like, got to get there right now. And just, you know, just accepting like what is, because I know a lot of actors get frustrated because they're like, oh, it's not happening for me now. And you know, like it's, I hear that attitude, and this person's booking, and this person's booking, and why aren't I booking? And I think, you know, just like yoga just squashed all of that for me. All of it. Yeah. Yeah. I'm thrilled when people that I know are booking because, you know, it just tells me that like energetically, like I'm in that level too.
That's
That I'm on that plane.
Yeah.
And somebody said to me recently, like, high tides rise the boat. So like, it's incredible when people you know are doing well. Like, you know, that's hope. That's not like, it's
and
just, yeah, it's just
really
helped, me grow like maturity and like, yeah, spiritually, all that stuff.
And that's really like the crux of this whole show, because the main reason why this show started was because I was looking through my entire Facebook friends roster and saw like so many different people from all walks of life that are committed to making their dreams a reality, that are not giving up, that are constantly pushing, that are constantly creating. And it's inspiring to see all of that. And it was just like, man, there's so many great people here that are doing so many great things, and they need to be celebrated. They need to be more known. They need to have a platform.
And yeah, no, you know, people like, realize, you know, it's really brave to continue this because so many people try and knock you down because a lot of people don't have the cojones to do it themselves.
Right.
So everybody's got something to say about it. I had somebody recently have the, speaking of balls, like say to me, like, oh, get your life. Why don't you get your life together? You know, it's like, okay, just because my life doesn't look like your life, not just because I don't fit into some suburban box, doesn't mean that my life isn't together, you know?
Right.
And it's all about like celebrating what you do have.
Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. If you've never been an Audible customer and want to see what they offer, just go to www.audibletrial.com/ExcelsiorJourneys and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs, download a title for free, and start listening. It's that easy. Why Audible? Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, and entertainers. And with this free 30-day trial, you'll have your pick of it all. You can hear books of all genres narrated by Jim Dale, Stephen Fry, Will Patton, Alex Hyde White, Jeff Brick, Neil Shaw, William Demerit, and even a few by me, George Soroy. So go to www.audibletrial.com/excelsiorjourneys and start your own 30-day journey with Audible today.
You're now a yoga instructor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when did that happen, when you kind of like caught the bug to do that?
So I guess I've been a certified instructor for about 10 years now. And it started slow, you know, because yoga is also very, very competitive. It's a saturated market, especially here in New York.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of demand. And I think that, you know, this day and age, like, I think people need it. We need yoga. We need it. Mm-hmm. Bad. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's like there's a lot of demand, but there's a lot of instructors. So in the beginning of my like teaching journey, like it was slow. Like I just had a class here and there. I still worked at the restaurant part time. And then I wound up, I was a cycling instructor for a while. I taught like, you know, spin or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I pretty much did that. I'm not like a big cardio person. Right. I'm like kind of windy. I mean, I'm all right. Like I'm in decent shape, but it's not my strong suit, but I basically did it to get into the gym so I can teach yoga because right. there's more demand. People don't want, you know, cycling is a lot of cardio. You burn out really quickly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's less cycling instructors than yoga. So, I started doing that and it worked. And then I wound up getting into the gyms to teach yoga that way. So, mm-hmm. so then, you know, I was, you know, and also with this kind of work, it's very freelance. You have two classes at this place, two classes at that place, blah, blah, blah. And then I guess it was about 2 years ago, one of the gyms I was working at like closed their doors like 2 days before Christmas with no notice.
Really?
They just went belly up, chapter 13 or whatever the heck it is.
Oh, chapter 11. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah. Whatever. You
chapter
know what
13 must have been really bad.
Yeah, it was just, it was a disaster.
There's no building at all. Like when you just...
Yeah, they had like negative money.
Right.
But yeah, it was so, but then with that gym closing, Equinox wound mm-hmm. up, they sent us emails like the next day and, you know, they sort of absorbed us all.
That's smart.
Equinox. Yeah.
That's really
so they're one of the big, yeah, they're one of the biggest gyms in New York. They're opening the 24th location this week. They're all over the world. So I'm very, very lucky to be able to work there. Everybody's great there. And there's volume, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of subbing. There's a lot of chances to work as a yoga instructor. And I don't have to teach cycling. I don't have to wait tables and I can make this, you know, like my main thing. So it's nice. And I have a commercial agent. They send me out. Laura and Jillian, they send me out every once in a while. So that's always nice.
So you've gotten some stability, you know, like as a yoga instructor, you've been able to, you know, concentrate on doing things you love while also having the time afterwards to focus on writing. Like you were saying, like go out on auditions as needed. So I saw your short film. I think it's very good, and I'm excited to see the finished cut when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
So what I'm you know like what I like to know is, first of all, you know like you know you gotta you know you gotta definitely have to tell our listeners about it. What first prompted you to make this?
I was coming off, I was in, I don't even want to call it a relationship. I was in a situationship with a man, mm-hmm. who treated me like garbage, but for some reason I was very, very, I was addicted to him. You know, it's such a weird thing to be addicted. They're great in the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. super fun, super attentive, super, you know, basically he was listening to every word I say so he can like use it against me later. If anyone's well versed in like narcissism or narcissistic abuse, like these people, like they work, you know, it's like a textbook, like the behavior is like, it's like they all have the same story. And, you know, I have some problems like within myself that would attract that. I'm not good with boundaries. I have some, you know, and sometimes they're good qualities. It's like non-confrontational, like a nice person, you know, mm-hmm. but sometimes with this, these qualities, like people take advantage, you know, And you know, I've noticed even to this day, like even being aware of it, people like this still, I'm a target for people like that. Like people still come at me. Like luckily at this point in my life, like I can assess it a lot quicker and dismiss it. And I'm not attracted to it. I don't like it anymore. It's just actually kind of gross and sad to me at this point, but I didn't know that then.
Right.
So, you know, I had went to a doctor and my blood pressure was 150 over 100 and my liver enzymes were high and I was anxious all the time. So it was generalized anxiety. And then I would have like acute attacks. Like if he called, if he didn't call, if I saw a picture of him with another woman on Facebook and he's telling me I'm crazy, even imagining things and gaslighting, you know? So right. This doctor was like, he was like, you have to block this man from your phone right now because he will kill you. He will literally kill you if you don't get rid of him. So, I did. And slowly things started to get better. And one of the ways that I channeled this was to write this short film. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I said this in my my pitch video or my GoFundMe that, like, you know, I think it was David Mamet that says our job isn't as entertainers. It's not to teach, but it's to entertain. Mm-hmm. And then Hamlet says it's to hold a mirror to nature. But, you know, my thought was, you know, this is my piece. If somebody younger than me or newer in the relationship can sort of like figure out these red flags, these qualities and get out of it quicker, then I've served my community. I also know people that are lost to men like this, that they're broken. They've fallen into a giant bottle of alcohol and ignore it and have sacrificed themselves for people like this, for people that don't even, these people, they're not capable of love. They don't have empathy. It's like impossible to be in a healthy, stable partnership with people like this. All they do is squash you. All they do is bring you down. They ruin you. And they get off on it. They enjoy it. They enjoy watching you suffer. And there are people that are completely lost. People that have children with people like this. People that have bosses that are like this. The parents like this. And, you know, just to let people know, like, you know, you're not alone. You're not crazy. There might be stuff about you that you might want to look at. You might want to like get a little stronger. You might want to like be very clear with boundaries. You might want to not be so afraid to speak your mind. And people like this won't bother with it. So that's why I wrote it. I just like threw my like guts and my heart out on this computer. Mm-hmm. Learn structure. I had the flu. Everybody had the flu like last Christmas or whatever. Everybody was like laid out. Oh. I had it for like 3 days and I just watched movies. Like all my old favorites with Save the Cat. You know the book Save the Cat?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I watched movies with Save the Cat in my hand and I sort of like check marked, and then I put two and two together. So I took my story and I put it in a structure that I think worked.
What were
and
some of your
that's
favorite?
How I did it.
What were some of your the movies that you watched?
I watched all 7 Harry Potters. Wait, that's right. Yeah. That's right. There was 7 was part 2.
7 books, so but yeah.
I watched all of those. And you know, even like the simplest movies, like, I mean, I think 21 Jump Street is hilarious.
But 21 that, Jump Street is very, awesome. That is
so funny. Not so Slim Shady. That's hilarious.
Right.
but that movie is, the structure is clear. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. I get it. You know, oh, here's another one that's like so dumb. Zach and Mary Make a Porno.
I am a big fan of Zach and Mary, and mainly because I'm a Kevin Smith fan.
Yeah. I'm from Jersey. I love Kevin Smith. Like,
yeah.
I love their
big part of why I'm doing this in the first place, because, you know, he has Smodcast. So that's what kind of like inspired me to kind of try to make my mark in this field and see what happens.
Oh, so cool. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that Kevin Smith had a podcast. I definitely
He not only has a podcast, but he's got a podcast network, the main show, Smodcast, with Scott Mosier, his producer. Mm-hmm. And the success of that show spawned Walt Flanagan, Brian Johnson, and Brian Quinn from Impractical Jokers to do their show called Tell 'Em Steve Dave. And that wound up actually like spinning off into Comic Book Men on AMC.
Huh. So,
like, yeah, those guys started because of that podcast.
Amazing. And, look at that.
Yeah. And I can go on about, you know, Kevin Smith Kevin Smith history, but I would definitely direct you to
I would definitely check that out.
The Smodcast Internet Network,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think, you know, what I love about that movie most is that they had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
They found their tribe.
Yep.
They did what they loved, the money and the love they followed. When they were unapologetic, when they, you know, they did exactly what they were meant to do.
Yeah. Kevin actually had said that.
That's why I love that movie so much. And it's like sophomoric and gross, but it's hilarious. And, you know. Yeah.
Kevin actually had gone on record saying that that was almost like a retelling of him making Clerks. Because, you know, only with Scott Mosier being played by Miri and putting in a little twist where they fall in love at the end. Yeah, you know, like he had, just like you said, you know, like he had the vision, he saw it through, and the rest is definitely history.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're seeing all these different movies and everything, and you're getting the hang of structure.
Yeah.
And did you, you know, like have any other books other than Save the Cat, or were you do you have like any sort of like formatting book or anything to assist you?
You know, not really, to be honest. The Save the Cat was the best, but I made like the index cards and I wrote on the poster boards and I used different colored markers and it was fun to work that way.
Awesome.
And then as far as like creative, I always say this, as far as like creativity goes, like where I get the best ideas is like some kind of like slow and steady cardio. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm in the pool.
Right.
Or sometimes like, you know, if the weather's good, I'll take a city bike and just ride. I'm a little nervous in the traffic, but I'll just go like down the Hudson River bike path. Like I'm not crazy exercising. I'm just like kind of slow and steady. Being in nature is also super inspiring. I fell in love with Rockaway this summer.
Oh, really?
Rockaway, New York. Yeah. And I started surfing.
Nice.
And I love it. I mean, whatever. I hold my nose still. Like, it's so embarrassing. But, and I like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing quite yet, but I love it. And I love it. So much fun. And just, yeah, being just, again, whether it's like the beach or the bike or like just being in the water, like I just feel, you know, I can usually like, I can spark up some ideas this way. And yeah. It's visceral. It's not like, I'm not thinking about it too much, but like, I just have to allow things to like come to me.
Right.
And I have to get better at like receiving the ideas as opposed to like stressing out about it and like ruminating and just thinking so much.
Does that happen? Like, do you kind of get that inspiration and everything like while you're posing? You know, like for, you know, doing the yoga poses?
Sometimes. Yeah. Again, it's, yes, I can't, and not when I'm teaching, obviously, because when I'm teaching, I'm with my students.
Right.
I really want to be present with them. But if I'm practicing, yeah, sometimes. I mean, again, it's not actual words. It's like pictures. It's like a feeling. But at least, you know, I can take that blob and shape it up when I'm sitting at a computer. So yeah, that's that. I have a second short I want to shoot too called Trust the Universe.
Yeah.
And it's kind of more of a buddy comedy about like, you know, getting to, you know, a certain age and regretting your choices and kind of, it's my ode to like suburbia. So I'm hoping to, you know, get that shot pretty soon. I have some cool people interested in that one too, but one thing at a time. So with the first film, I still need sound and color correction, and then I'm going to send it off to festivals.
Awesome. Do you have music picked out?
You know, I don't. I'm not. There's a couple of phone sounds that I need. There's one scene where I'm just going to use some like you know, like royalty free, like canned music. I don't really need anything too fancy.
Right.
And then, yeah, just, you know, just super benign and simple. Like, you know, whoever I have somebody interested in doing the sound, so I'm probably going to give them the license to do it because I feel like they know better than I would.
Mm-hmm. So you do have plans and everything to kind of, you know, shop this around it for, you know, different festivals and everything.
Yeah, you know, I just decided to take my acting career in my own hands, quite frankly. Like, you know, the way it is now with the business is you have to go to these like pay to play places. I don't know if you remember these agent and casting director seminars where you pay like $90 to meet one casting director.
Yeah. They have something similar with voiceover artists. There's voices.com and voice123.com where basically what you're doing is you're paying a monthly stipend for the right to audition for all of these different things. And if you really want to be successful at that, then you got to be sitting at that at your microphone ready to do, you know, like whatever script, like at a moment's notice, and then just get it right over there. And by the time you've gotten it over there, there are other 50 people right before you that just did the same thing. So it's very easy to get lost in the shuffle. So I remember those, you know, kind of showcases.
Yeah, they're not even showcases anymore. It's just like maybe when I was a kid acting, you were in like a black box theater and a bunch of people did scenes. And then, you know, back in the day, it was the agents that had the power. It wasn't the casting directors. Mm-hmm. Now it's the opposite. Now the casting director can call you in directly, you know, and the agent is sort of like the middleman. But earlier it wasn't like that. The agent was the one that had the power. So it was like, oh, got to get an agent. And now it's like an agent's not going to look at you unless you have some credits.
Right.
So the only way to get credits is, again, to go to these casting director seminars. And these people that run it, you know, they make you feel like you don't care about your career unless you give them all your money.
Right.
You know, so that's bullshit. I'm like, where did that even come from?
Right.
You know, and I think they were cracking down in LA. Like apparently like casting directors aren't allowed to take headshots, but that's kind of like BS because anybody can find anybody on the internet these days. So it doesn't even matter all that much. So I just said, no, if I'm going to invest in anything, I'm going to invest in my own project and write something that I know I'm right for and take my career in my own hands.
That's
and
terrific.
That's what I decided to do. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Do you see this?
You know, it's so empowering. It was such a good feeling to do that.
Yeah. Do you see the, do you see this character kind of like moving on into like other short films?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. Like I was thinking about writing, and this is the first time I've said this out loud.
Oh,
in public. Anyway.
I have a scoop.
I've thought about, you know, having, you know, maybe a short film of them in the beginning of their relationship when everything was awesome, or like maybe at his funeral or something.
Oh, wow. Saying,
you know what I mean? Like,
you could have both. Use the funeral as a framework.
Right. Exactly. Then, like showing the different, or, you know, I also, you know, speaking of Rockaway, like they had every summer they have a festival of films that are about surfing.
Oh.
And a big part of my healing from this was going to Rockaway. Still, I'm going Sunday. Like it helps, you know, it helps to be by the water, like I mentioned earlier. So I was like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe this character like getting over her, you know, this dude, you know, not talking to him for a couple of months and you know, like and connecting at the beach and connecting with people at the beach or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. So yeah, I have a whole bunch of ideas. I'm full of ideas.
Yeah. And ideas. Yeah, they're definitely, I love that. And so where?
Yeah, I just need a producer if you know anybody.
Oh, yeah.
I need a hustler. I need a trusting hustler.
Well, you're doing really well regarding, you did an Indiegogo?
I did a GoFundMe.
A GoFundMe. That's right.
Okay. I looked at the other ones. I looked at Seed and Spark. I looked at
Kickstarter.
Yeah, I looked at all of them, and I just – it was stressful enough to watch mm-hmm. that thing.
Yeah.
That I just – yeah, I couldn't I don't think I could have handled the stress of, like, not getting any of it, you know.
Yeah. I went through that when I was, you know, like, in between jobs and decided that I was going to raise money for voice lessons and just basically just said that, you know, like, let me narrate your stuff for you. So, you know, like, for 500 words, it'll be $10. For 1,000 words, it'll be $20. And somehow, you know, like, just, you know, scraping by, like, right at the very end, and with the help of a couple of, you know, very generous people that that I'm looking forward to working with on their projects, it happened. I was able to reach my goal and finally, like, get it across the finish line. But yeah, that month was really stressful, especially considering that I was looking for a job at the same time. So things weren't exactly you know, right in my mind while I was going through all of that.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. And that's why I'm like, I would like to pass the producer buck. I would like to relinquish control.
I do not blame
you. Because there's something, you know, there are people out there that are good at it and that enjoy it. You know, they enjoy it. Like, I'm like, oh, I got to ask somebody. I don't even want to ask them for $10. Like, it's like, it's so, you know, it's just so awkward.
Yeah.
I know some people are good at it and they, like, know how to, like, work it and they know how to make it look like an investment. And I mean, I believe in my work. It's not that, but you know,
it's like putting yourself
out there too on the internet. Yeah. It's like, ooh.
It's like when I'm telling people to buy my books, you know, and everything. I don't like doing that, you know, like, but at the same time, I need people to read it.
Right.
I need people to, you know, like, and I hope that people enjoy them. I hope that they write reviews on them, but yeah, it's something, you know, like, it's something to really kind of put yourself out there. And that's awesome that you're doing that, even though it's not exactly the part of it that you really loved.
Like, making the shot list, you know, that was fun. And were there
people that you went to school with, you know, like, over at Marymount that were filmmakers in their own right that you had kind of, like, been able to pick their brain in some way?
From Marymount, I don't want to talk about it really, but one of those people that showed me their true colors was a friend from Marymount.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I knew it. You know, we know who people are. We just don't want to admit it, or we're, you know, dazzled by something else or a charm, or again, I'm like a magnet for these kind of people. So, so yeah, there are some bad eggs at Marymount.
Well, you know, they're bad eggs everywhere, unfortunately.
Sure. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. But, you know, again, it's about being smart and assessing, like, who's to, you know, who can you trust? And again, this was a good lesson, because it was like, this is my baby. Like, I'm not playing.
Right.
I'm in charge. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not putting up with any sort of BS or garbage. Like, I'm the boss. I have the power here. You know, I'm not putting up, I mean, whatever, getting terrible advice and just shady behavior and, you know, canceling on me last, you know, just a bunch of, like, nonsense. Again, we're grown-ups. Like, this is not high school. This is real life.
Right. And you know. Yes, but that's so inspiring, that fact that you were able to, you know, take a hold of yourself in terms of your career, your vision, your goals, and want to see them through on your terms. That's very, very inspiring, and it's something that I hope that a lot of listeners can take to heart. You know, I'm sure that, you know, a lot of you guys out there, I'm sure you have a project, you have some form of passion and everything that you just need to invest in and see it through. And it's a great thing to see that happen. So where can people find you, Christina?
Please follow me on the Instagram.
Yes.
For sure. Christina Erickson Yogi.
And that's And that's K-R-I-S.
All K's, yes. Very Viking. T-I-N-A. My dad is Swedish. So Christina Eriksson, all K's.
Yep.
Christina Eriksson Yogi, and you can find me on Instagram. And then stay tuned for the film. I'll post updates about the film on Instagram as well. And yeah, hoping to get that thing into festivals. There's a GoFundMe link if you're so inclined. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm not such a bad producer after all.
There you go.
Like we said,
Christina, there are bad eggs everywhere, but you're definitely a good egg.
Oh, thanks, George. You too.
Thank you. And I'm so thrilled that you were able to come here to tell your story, to share your passion, your drive with everyone here. So I really hope that that a lot of you are taking these stories to heart and are not giving up on your own journey. Just to wrap this up, I'm really, really grateful that Christina, that you took the time to come here and talk to us. And I really hope that that all my listeners have been able to grab onto this, run with it, and go and follow their own Excelsior journey. So for Christina Eriksson, this is George Soroy saying to you, ever upward.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to heesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@heesgotit.com.